Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? Welcome to day two of our holiday podcast here at Waypoint. Today joining me, I think this is probably going to be the same crew as yesterday. We're in the middle of recording these, recording them out of order, so who even knows? Danielle Riendo is here.
Hi, hello.
Rob Zachney.
Here with the wrecking crew.
That video hasn't aired yet. You're referencing
the holiday
a thing that...
wrecking crew.
Oh, wait, maybe that will be today. Today's Tuesday. That'll actually be...
Yeah.
Yep, good. If you don't know what Rob's talking about, go watch our video of us playing some XCOM 2 featuring the wrecking crew. Featuring a Russian who believes he's a steampunk.
Hey, and if anyone has a good suggestion for, like, a douchebaggy, steampunky name for an alien hunter that sounds like gears and valves, then let us know, because we need some help.
We do need some help. Also joining us, the truest steampunk of them all, Patrick Kleppe.
Am I still angry about this tax bill a week later? Check in.
I am.
Check in with my Twitter feed a week from now.
Yeah,
no,
probably.
No, wait. I mean, my current Twitter feed in the 19th.
Twitter, I see.
I'm telling myself to check my Twitter feed a week from now.
I see. You're saying when you listen to this
when I re-listen to all of our podcasts.
On December 26th, on December 25th, it's Christmas time in the Klepek household. You exchange gifts. There's singing, cake, a ham or a turkey, perhaps. 26th rolls around. You are like sit the whole family down. And you go, all right,
time to listen podcast. To
my podcast. Waypoint podcast time. It's funny you bring up the tax bill, Patrick, because today, to go hand in hand with an article that Danielle wrote about all the great queer characters in games this year, we wanted to kind of circle back around to something we did way earlier this year, which was, you know what, let me just talk about politics. Talk about what politics looks like in games this year. Talk about what the kind of state of play is. I was not meant to be a pun in any way, but like... You know, it has been, we've said it again and again, I think, all year. This year fucking sucks. We wear our politics pretty cleanly on our sleeves, or I mean, maybe it's not even that we wear them so much as we do our best to explore them very publicly. We talk about games with a political lens, and, you know, what that meant 2 years ago is not what that means now. It means what it meant 2 years ago and also means this other thing, too, where we're thinking about how the current, administration in Washington is affecting things in the U.S. for games, how world politics has affected things all around the world. It is a story that there are types of stories that we reported on this year that are not what we would have thought to report on a couple of years ago. Not that those stories weren't there, but, you know, I think this was kind of a kick in the ass to some degree. So I'm just kind of, I just get the temperature in the room. Like the day that we're recording this, moments ago while we were recording another video, the House of Representatives passed the Republican tax overhaul. That is, I don't even like calling it that because it's such a
undersell
of what
side,
the fuck it is.
What is breaking right now is, so you know when all the really good Virginia votes happened, like a month and a half ago, that the Democrats got a bunch of, made a lot of progress in the House of Delegates in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of them had to go to a recount. And if a couple of those tipped the Democrats' way, they could either win or tie the House of Delegates. Which, to be clear, they were down 32 seats prior to the election.
Like a lot.
A huge amount. Yeah. It was generationally in in Republican power. And so the recount happened today and was just certified. And they won a seat in the House of Delegates by one vote, which brings it to 50-50 power because the Democrats got that like not one vote, like, oh, we went to the Senate and like there were 50, you know, no, one vote in an, like an, in an election, right, was enough to
like one person stood in the booth.
Yes.
Oh.
And that gives them 50-50 and a lot a better chance of passing a Medicare expansion in Virginia. So that's good.
Perfect. It's a step. It's a step. And like those local races are going to be the things that help shift policy, like in general, especially if Republicans continue to run things at the federal level. Like one of the ways to counter that is to start winning local elections and making, you know, if the shift is towards state power, then fucking run those states, you know. It is maybe the stuff that was happening in Virginia, and I guess I'll still say Alabama, is meaningful and heartening. Maybe some of the stuff Doug Jones has said since that vote has not been as great. But
well, then you got Meacham in Virginia, right. Like, man, I can't wait to get people back on the workforce who were on Medicaid. So that's heartening.
Yeah. Which, so is this where we're at?
It's interesting you talk about like the what's actually important is like the local elections, because it's about like stuff you can control. Like I think has been like the a lesson of 2017 for me, and like in this whole climate was like finding things that I can make an impact in, and like that runs everything from like voting in my local school board to make a, you know, changes on like a, you know, like an actual high school like board policy level, and then on the flip side of that is like essentially like why we like started Waypoint. Like part of that was like a frustration that Austin and I have had like in our history of like working for places that politics just were not a huge part of like how you ran a video game website, which is like totally fine for lots of places. That's less of an indictment as much as like what I found myself more interested in doing was that type of work. And so like Waypoint, you know, from day one was like trying to create a space that like that's just the kind of place we are, and like that has been really heartening to have in 2017 was like a cool, like a really just a place where I can have those thoughts and have those conversations and share that with like a larger audience that maybe doesn't get to have those conversations with people in their lives. It's like they can come to Waypoint and listen to people have those and participate that, whether it's in the forums or Twitter or like whatever the case, like trying to create a community that is built around sort of like those shared values and interests.
And I here's the thing I want to say briefly about that too, is like, I know that lots of people, I've you know, spoken to people, fans of ours, readers, people who maybe don't agree with us on everything, but who appreciate, and I appreciate that they appreciate this, that we put stuff on their radar or connect it to their world in ways that helps them to think about it. I have done a lot of roasting a sort of very popular liberal mode of relating the political in my time, which is to say, comparisons between Trump and Voldemort, or Trump and Emperor Palpatine, or Trump and Sauron, or Trump and various other villainous, you know, figures in pop culture. And in general, the sort of like hashtag the resistance, hashtag wear the rebel alliance symbol on your sleeve, the like we are the we are up to no good shit, like those metaphors have always bugged me because they are very surface level, and when they're very surface level, they suggest a certain arc to history that is rarely as clean. They suggest a certain purity that you will not find in the people you're going to vote for, unfortunately. And they suggest a certain degree of like there is a reductive quality on the way to making what might feel at the time like an effective metaphor. But what I do want to say is I also recognize, and one of the things that I'm so proud of being able to do this year has been, how do these policies materially affect the world that we have already spent a lot of attention, paying a lot of attention to? So like when we ran the story about how the getting rid of the ACA could affect independent game developers and remove a social safety net that allowed them to leave big publishers and go on to do their own projects, to me, that is one of those things that does the walks that line between saying, oh, what's the thing you're interested in, and then over here, what is the sort of like big picture political event happening, and how do we tie those two things together? And I think we've found the right mix of those things. It's certainly not to say that we also haven't turned to games to say, like, well, how can we figure something out or think through a problem by using Dark Souls 2 as a framework for thinking about, political or theoretical or philosophical concerns. And I think that stuff totally works, and I've been really happy to have Waypoint be a place where we can do that work. I just hope we keep doing it well. Danielle, it sounded like you had a thing to say there, yeah.
More than anything, one thing that really struck me when you were saying that, what you were saying about sort of the impetus to simplify, the impetus to put things in the framework of, you know, good guys versus bad guys, the way that a lot of our popular fiction does, it does two things. And one of them is, of course, sort of related to something we've talked about recently about, like, your consumer tastes dictating who you are as a person, which is still a little bit part of the problem. But more than that, and I don't know if we want to tie this sort of directly into specific games, but we can or we can't. It's okay either way. But it did remarkably strike me as basically something that's in a line from Wolfenstein, which is, you know, sort of BJ is going on and on. He's talking, this is in the scene where he meets Grace for the first time in New York. He's going on and on, you know, about, oh, they're monsters. He says something about the Nazis are monsters after Grace has sort of gone on and talked about what the Nazis have done, what they've done to America, what they did in the bombing. And she kind of does that thing where she just looks at him and she's like, no, they're men. And that's one of the more powerful moments in a game full of powerful moments that, of course, we've talked it to death. But right there, that like immediately brought me right back to that scene. And I think the tone of that game, it did it. I think it went there in a really good way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's probably a good moment to pivot to think about how games have responded this year, whether they intended to or not, how games have or haven't addressed our political moment. Obviously, I think we would, based on what we've already talked about, I think we would all say that New Colossus probably is the easiest pick to pull from here. But I'm curious if anybody else can point to other games this year that they felt like maybe didn't address the Trump administration, but addressed some idea or some struggle or something this year in a way that you didn't expect or in a way that impressed you or made you think.
There is a through line through some of the games. You know, I'm of course, we're doing our end of year stuff. We're doing our, you know, sort of games of the year stuff. There was a through line in like three of my games of the year that went directly to sort of dark corporate futures that I thought was pretty interesting. In Tacoma and Prey and Observer, they all kind of had different degrees of this, but all of them absolutely kind of took this stance of like, yeah, we're just gonna keep going down this path is bad and everything's gonna be bad and everybody's gonna suffer for it. Human beings will suffer for the idea that corporations will have more autonomy than individual humans, and in very different ways. Prey is much more the sort of classic sci-fi. You know, it was using it as something of a backdrop. You know, the corporate ass covering is a lot of what you know created the conditions for the disaster. But Tacoma, I think, really digs in an interesting way here by positing not just sort of a dark, monstrous corporate future, but just a really sad and grim one where people, you know, two husbands will argue over whether they should stay with Hilton because they have all these, you know, affinity points, which is basically what currency is in this world. Or whether they should go to the Sheraton, who, you know, maybe has a better, you know, retirement home that you can go to if you stay with the company for 30 years. Things like that really, really kind of meant a lot to me in terms of kind of digging into a lot of the financial impact of the kinds of decisions that are being made.
Tacoma's a really interesting one, I think. Because, the whole loyalty points thing, it sort of posits that we're heading towards this economy of basically government-sanctioned indentured servitude to corporate entities. So it's sort of like the if sort of the socialist dream is of taking these, like, massive corporate institutions that have basically become core civic infrastructure and nationalizing them. Tacoma is saying, well, what if instead they never get nationalized and instead sort of trap human beings in their walled garden of employment and benefits and perquisites? Mm-hmm. And Yeah, so everyone in Tacoma is to an extent trapped in their job because they can't give up. They can't give up benefits. They can't give up the opportunities it's creating to go to, say, like Amazon University. There's a loyalty transfer point. You don't pay tuition money anymore. You pay tuition loyalty points. And this is, you know, when we're talking about that, you know, the many attempted acts of sabotage and destruction of the ACA, this is partly what a lot of this revolves around. This idea that, like, yeah, you're free, but you are constrained in a lot of ways by corporate structures and sort of rigging of the system in ways that benefit corporations and shareholders. And so I think, yeah, Tacoma has that going for it, as well as a really bleak and totally authentic feeling vision of how fucking smarmy the future we are on track to build is going to be. This idea that, like, you know, or like late this year, Elon Musk had one of his big brainstorms, one of his big moonshot type ideas, super exciting stuff. He was going to put a fucking Tesla Roadster in orbit around Mars using one of his rockets.
Uh-huh.
And his it's Space One, right?
The
rocket venture is running.
I believe that that's small. Yeah, I think that's right.
It is exciting stuff. It is like cutting edge rocketry stuff.
Space One is someone else's.
Is that the Virgin Death Trap?
Maybe.
Experimental plane? Anyway, point is, so some of that is exciting, but then also, what is the vision there? I'm going to basically hang a corporate billboard for my fucking car company in orbit around Mars.
Right.
In other words, I'm basically going to vandalize the natural wonder that is our solar system in some ways.
Right.
Hang a billboard. But this is kind of what we are sleepwalking towards. And Tacoma's like, okay, every time you've ever said, like, I love living in the future when your phone, like, gets an email or, you know, you manage to, like, edit a photo, you know, using your fingertips. Every time you say, I love living in the future, Tacoma's like, okay, let's just take that to the logical consequences. The future's here. We have space travel. You can see the solar system. There's extraterrestrial colonization happening. All awesome shit, right? Except it's going to be the same garbage we have now, all the like twee branding that we already live with to the nth degree, and there's no escape from it.
Totally. Oh, and I think that connects to something else that I think I saw throughout games this year, which was a degree of environmentalist concern. You know, I don't think that Mass Effect Andromeda is a fantastic game. I don't love Horizon Zero Dawn as much as many people. But both of those games, among others, Rain World this year, Blockhood this year, like there was a lot of games this year that thought, okay, the thing that is going to be more catastrophic than any supervillain, more deadly than any evil AI, is going to be environmental destruction. Even when, you know, evil supervillains and AIs are involved, the thing that is the most existential threat for human life is environmental disaster that we are steadily walking towards. And I don't know that any of those games necessarily stuck with me particularly well, but there is something about that's one of those things that I'm hopeful that as we continue to move forward, we get more and more and more about, and even maybe I can imagine it being the place where we actually see works that are almost didactic, almost polemic. I just got a chance to rewatch Nausicaa and in the Valley of the Wind, which was the pre-Studio Ghibli film, the one that kind of led to Studio Ghibli being made, and that is a movie that is like fucking on its nose, like 100% about environmentalism and conservation and the protection of animals and blah blah blah. And I, you know, I think it's almost, there's a degree of it that's like a little corny now because it's so obvious, but at the same time, there is, there of all of the issues, it is the one that is the most absurd that we are not unified on addressing. And I say that as someone who, you know, is not an environmentalist first and foremost. I am, you know, I've definitely studied labor more than I've studied, you know, environmental theory or environmental policy. But I absolutely can imagine us getting games in the near future, and I hope we do, that really dig into that topic head first and encourage us to become more politically active, because it's a fucking big one. It's a big one.
Yeah, if we can't live, that's a little bit of an issue.
It's a bit of an issue.
No.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anyone else have anything else that they saw in games this year, or the near future, even? You know,
I was gonna say this is one that I'm sure Danielle has thought a lot about. But so the new Life is Strange, which that's like we're recording this. I think the final episode is out. I think I just saw Steam download it for me. But it's a game certainly has a political bent, especially in its focus on. The kind of relationships it chooses to highlight, but a game that had external politics thrust on it, and thus, like, its political lean is interesting because it has, in some ways, less to do with the game itself as much as, like, the corporate structure around it. And so for people who aren't aware, like, the new Life is Strange Before the Storm, which was not made by Don't Nod, the original developers, they're making another Life is Strange that we don't know what it'll be about or if it'll be connected or in the same universe or whatever, but they're doing something else. It was by a new team, but also working under Square Enix. And the prequel chose to, or I guess was in development that overlapped with the SAG-AFTRA voice actor strike. And as a result, they were not able to secure some of the same voice acting talent, such as Ashley Birch. And so they replaced them rather than waiting for the original, for the voice actor strike to resolve itself, for the labor dispute to come to a conclusion, they chose to press forward with the game. And the weird part is like that voice acting dispute got resolved, and now the voice actors are coming back for the epilogue episode that is coming out in January, I believe, that will be even... It's a prequel. It takes place even earlier in the timeline for the two main characters from Life is Strange. But it made this really interesting moment where... for example, Danielle and I have both wrote about Before the Storm in 2017. And it wasn't until... a little bit into writing about it that someone sort of dragged us on Twitter by pointing out that how can you write about a game without at least like talking about the fact of the labor politics surrounding it. And it was a totally 100% like valid criticism that even if we were going to write about that game that we should acknowledge some of the labor politics around it because it is a game that you know, Danielle, as you have written, like, you know, because of the relationships portrayed in it, it means a lot to you and to a lot of people to see a you know, a gay relationship at the heart, and like not just that it's there, it's celebrated. It's like it is, and especially the prequel is like it's super gay. Like it's like it really leans into it in a way that the original game was more kind of dancing around and was a little more open to interpretation in a lot of ways. Whereas this one is just like nah,
they're gay lesbians all the Harold. Way.
Yeah,
they're lesbians, Harold. Yes, exactly, yeah, Rob. Great. Thank you.
Perfect.
But I'm sure you must have had some complicated feelings about that as you sort of played through it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really hard to kind of love something with your whole heart and then go, you know, to look into a little bit of how it was made and then kind of think like, oh God, they use scab labor. Like, God, you know, God damn it. You know, kind of throw the desk over and have that kind of reaction a little bit of like, you made something so great. Can't you make it the right way too? And then, of course, that's me being also like a little bit, not selfish, but a little selfish, wanting this to kind of be, we talk a lot about things that are problematic, right? We talk a lot about, you know, that phrase itself, and it's okay to like things and understand that, you know, there are compromises made sometimes when something is made, and you have to kind of decide where you land on that in a lot of ways, and you have to kind of be honest with yourself where you land on something. So that remains like the game this year that I have the most complicated feelings on because of that. And
totally,
God, yeah, and I still am so frustrated. I'm, you know, personally frustrated by it because it's something I want to completely wholeheartedly celebrate. Because it's not only just like super gay, but it's also super honest. In a lot of ways, it's honest about things like attraction and things like being an awkward teenager and a lot of other things that it really nailed. I thought the writing was really incredible in this one.
Yeah, I expected them to fuck it up real bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I thought, given sort of a flawed premise that wasn't something I necessarily thought needed to be explored, they actually ended up crafting something like really interesting, I thought. I'm really looking forward to sort of seeing how it all ends up playing out in the finale. But yeah, it was one of those things where, like, in my top 10 list, like, I almost felt like the labor politics disqualified it from being, like, it was something that I found interesting and wanted to write about, but I was wondering, I was like, does that, like, what does it say to put it in my top 10? And I don't know. Like, it just, that game, I'm with you in that it bothered me that I had to be so wishy-washy about it, given that I, like you, wanted to just celebrate, like, this thing that shouldn't have worked, and instead not only worked, but is like really great in totally different ways. Like if the through line of Life is Strange is being earnest to a fault, which is, you know, like a great way to describe sort of like a lot of the characters and the emotions. Like Life is Strange did it in one direction, and then Before the Storm does it in another, in a way that I really enjoyed.
100%. There's a little bit of this. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Austin.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, there's a tiny bit of this for me as well in Hat in Time, which, again, was another game that I really enjoyed. And it was like, oh, my God, this shouldn't work. You know, 3D platformers are ridiculously hard.
Especially
to make.
After Ukulele fucked it up so bad.
Yes! Oh, yes, exactly. Right. So, really, I was not expecting much, and I really, really enjoyed that game. And then there was, oh, right, JonTron is in this game, which, of course, if you're unfamiliar with the controversy, he has said some ridiculously racist things. And he was sort of a bit part voice actor in the game, but the fact that they kind of left him in when they kicked him out of Ukulele, the other game that he was in, I think, he was another sort of character in that game. That didn't look great either. That had some connotations there,
well,
too.
I mean, the part of the thing that I think is probably worth saying is this is true across the board. Games, especially big AAA games, we know are made under shitty conditions. Crunch culture has been defended multiple times this year. Yeah. The ESA has come out to defend Trump's policies many times and celebrate them. There is... like, we game under protest. We game as hypocrites to some degree.
Well, that's life.
We
are daily hypocrites in all parts 100%. Of our lives.
You breathe under hypocrisy.
But yeah. But there is a difference, I think, between... I wanted to just make sure we called that out because I don't want anyone saying, like, well, as long as we don't have those two issues, the industry where it's at now is good. Like, no, like, so long as people are crunching, it's not good. Like, so long as we have a situation where crunch culture is not just accepted, but often defended. So long as we have a culture in which, you know, the response to voice actors trying to push back and go on strike is, well, why doesn't everybody who makes a game, what the people who really make games, get more pay? And instead of the answer being that, it should be, you know, you should. And that might mean destabilizing the industry for a little while as we work out what a more equitable situation is. Like, until it's that, we will always have work to do. So even when these, like, big picture or these kind of big attention-grabbing issues that go into making our games, like, are... even if those are gone, even those are out of sight, that doesn't mean that there aren't other problems to address. Again, on top of the environmental issues, on top of e-waste, on top of all of this stuff. And, like, that isn't meant to be demoralizing or isn't meant to say, like, and that's why you're not allowed to play video games. But one of the ways in which capital hides its sins, one of the ways in which capitalism tricks us is to make us think that products arrive fully formed on the shelf. They come from a mind and then go into a box. And it is one of the best things we can do to interrogate how a product is made and what the material actions were that brought it there. Because and then what happens to it when we're done with it also. Because when you don't, like, that is when you end up with workers being underpaid, with work conditions being really terrible, with environmental disaster, with, you know, even with, like, Bitcoin mining using up more energy than Google does now, which is a wild statistic. And, like, those are the things that are easy to parse over. And I think it's on us all to want and work towards a more equitable and stronger future for gaming, even if it's a bumpy ride along the way. Because otherwise, like, it's just going to burn down faster. Like, I'll take a few bad years of games if it means getting to a place where we know that, like, the industry is a lot more stable and a lot more built around, a lot more open and a lot more built towards having a future, instead of just over and over again taking these huge home run swings and churning through people because people are an easy to replace resource, you know? I think that's my big spiel for this year.
Yeah, I want developers to be able to eat, not be afraid of being harassed in their workplace, and have a job. Those are things.
We should talk about this in another episode, because we're running out of time now. But, like, start thinking about and for listeners too, because we're going to wrap back around to this. What could a different games industry look like? We're going to come back to that a little bit later this week. Start dreaming. We'll see if our dreams line up. I think that might do it for us. I think we're just running out of time at this point, unless anyone has any last little shout-outs.
I do have one shout-out I've been kind of sitting on.
Sure.
Just a little bit, because it's a game I did not expect any kind of political messaging or awareness, like, from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. Assassin's Creed Origins.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one, like, there's a lot of reasons this game has ended up being a really pleasant surprise for me this year. There's actually a lot that I like going on in that game. But Cameron Kunzelman wrote about this really, really well for one of his Postscript columns, which is about, like, Assassin's Creed Origins is sort of about the start of the war between the Assassins and the Templar. You know, the Templar kind of already exists in the story, but this is about how, like, the Assassins form to counter them. And it starts with a couple of grieving parents kind of on a vendetta to avenge a personal tragedy, which is how a lot of Assassin's Creed stories start, right? Like, something bad happens to someone personally, and then you go kill the wrongdoers, but it's all part of this entire meta plot that spans generations. Here you're at the start of all that. And what's really interesting is the sort of schism that opens up in this story is that your character, the player character, is a video game sad dad in some ways. He thinks this revenge is finite. That once the people who did this to his family and who have been sort of plotting to subvert the rule of law in Egypt, right? Once they're dealt with, he can go back with his wife to their small town in Siwa, and life will be okay again. They can go back, and it will be like this didn't happen. Or not like this didn't happen, but they'll move on. And she realizes, as the scope of the conspiracy and interests that brought this about begins to become clear, she realizes that, like, no, justice requires something more. Like, there are broader systems at play here. Like, even if we are personally avenged, even if we are personally safe, they're going to do this to other people, to other families, in other places, in other parts of the world that we don't even know about. And now that we have that awareness, it's incumbent on us to act.
Right.
And I think that is really impressive for an Assassin's Creed game of all things. Like, and it's still an Assassin's Creed game. Like, it's still kind of vague, but it is kind of pointing toward this awareness of, like, okay, well here's why the Assassins exist, right? Like, here's what happens when you realize that, like, a lot of the evils in the world are not isolated incidents. They're not a few bad actors. They are systemic, and they're cross multiple generations, and fighting them requires a completely different perspective and a different mindset.
Which sort of runs against one of the long-running things with Assassin's Creed, which is the sort of conspiracy theory style. Oh, it's these 12 people in a room, like they're twirling their mustaches. Like, well, okay, but like, why are they twirling their mustaches? Who, like, there's always going to be 12 people in a room so long as the rest of this shit is lined up the way it is. And like, that ends up being a much harder fight to have. Like, the sad lesson of the Assassin's Creed games is that it doesn't just mean you have to kill the 12 people in that room. Like, that isn't going to fix
13.
It's 13. If you kill the 13, you kill whoever that
13. What if I kill 14?
If you kill 14. Assassin's Creed 14, in which you kill the 14 people in that room.
Dude, this might be Assassin's Creed 14. How many...
This might be Assassin's Creed 14.
Wrong, yeah.
There's okay. No way. That's not...
Assassin's Creed series. Hey, let's remember there were three Assassin's Creed 2 games.
And there
also
are also three
the
of those...
PSP games?
Yeah. And well, the side-scrollers.
We're gonna say mainline. Okay, and mainline still means Assassin's Creed 2, like, colon. We have Assassin's Creed, Creed 2.
2.
Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Brotherhood 3.
Revelations
4. 3.
3. 5.
4. Black
6.
Flag.
Wait. Yep. And then, we're not doing the other ones. Rogue, Liberation, No.
See, it really would be 14
I think
if you
Rogue,
counted those.
Rogue,
I think
Rogue,
I think Rogue counts. Rogue counts. So that's 7. Unity, 8. Syndicate, 9. Origins, 10.
What about Assassin's Creed 3? Did you leave that out?
No, we got it.
No,
that.
We said 3.
So 10.
I feel like you can count Liberation.
I feel like it's... Yeah,
that's the PSP
like that.
Game. That's a whole game.
Well, and you can now play it on PC. I understand why it wasn't mainline, but I think it kind of got retconned into, like, okay, actually, this is a really important AC game.
So 11.
Right. Yeah. That's
so pretty close.
Pretty close.
So
pretty
you
close.
Kill 11 epochs worth of people, and you're good to fucking go. No, but I think, but this is why it's effective. Like, telling the origin story here, it's this weird thing of, like, there's this awful trend of, like, what do you do when you're out of ideas for sequels? You do the origin story.
Right.
And that's kind of what I expected from this one. It was going to be like, oh, fuck it. Like, you guys like pyramids, right? Okay, here we go. And instead, it ends up being really affecting because coming at this stage in the series, you realize what Aya is the character who sort of founds the Assassin Order. You realize what she just signed up for.
Right.
And the magnitude of the struggle that she and her ideological adherents are going to commit themselves to. And I think, it does go beyond just like, you know, waxing a dozen or so, shitty lesser demons every generation. It goes to uprooting their web of influence and oppressive systems wherever you find them, dismantling them, and basically salting the earth so that those systems and those foundations of power cannot reform. Now, admittedly, the series as a whole kind of indicates the Assassins have not really succeeded. But nevertheless,
every generation,
important awareness.
They're going to keep at it.
You
got to
try.
Keep at it. You got to try.
Nevertheless, the Assassins persist.
Fuck off.
Oh my god.
All right. Well,
I have one more.
Okay.
But it's just a shout out. It's just Night in the Woods. Shout out. It's a sympathetic portrait of depressed community, Rust Belt. That's all. It's a shout out. I'm already done.
Okay. We've been going for longer than we were supposed to. That's okay. We will be back tomorrow with another one of these, so look for that. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.vice.com. I'm just going to give those shout-outs today. We got to wrap up and then record another one of these. Otherwise, we will run out of time. Hope everyone's having a good holiday. Until tomorrow, Danielle, what do we say?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.